Sharon, you come across your knowledge of fine whiskeys, honestly. Well,
I'm a whiskey snob.
Back. People that tune into court to hear that opening sentence aren't going to understand what it means out of context. This is Jeff Sachs from Reb Yeshiva here in Mishkan Sipor. We're learning Masechet Kiddushin. We're on Daf Mem Hey Omed Bet in the middle, 45B. We'll make a little headway tonight. We're coming up on the next Amud. We're coming up to the next Mishnah, although we're not going to get there tonight. And then, but unfortunately, for the next 2 weeks, we will not have Shi'ur. 2 weeks after Tisha B'Av, we won't have Shi'ur. People going off on their vacations and whatnot. And I hope that in 3 weeks we'll pick up. But it happens that in 3 weeks exactly, my daughter's becoming bat mitzvah, like Bo Bayom. Well, no, there's nothing scheduled. Like that Shabbat, we're having a family Shabbat.
Make your priorities.
And then there's going to be some, yes, and then there's going to be some kind of party, but that's scheduled for later. So I don't know what's happening that night. It could be that I'll be involved in other things, but let's presume we're meeting in 3 weeks unless you hear otherwise. So here we are. We're still dealing with this. Sorry.
Yeah,
it's a sin to waste it. You can drink it yourself. We're still dealing with this question of Kiddushei Ketana. Kiddushei Ketana, a young woman, a girl. You're still, at that age, you're still allowed to call a young woman a girl under bat mitzvah age. I guess I have 3 weeks left to marry my daughter off to a fine young man, but it's not likely to happen. So the Gemara here says, you see, we're about halfway down. And it is two dots. The first words on the line are Delo Tarach, two dots, Nitkadsha Ledat Aviha. A young girl. You see where we are?
No. Back in the middle of the column.
Nitkadsha Ledat Aviha.
Nitkadsha Ledat Aviha. After the two dots. Nitkadsha Ledat Aviha. That's why it's better to be online. The people online see the arrow, the highlighter. Nitkadsha Ledat Aviha. The young girl accepts Kiddushin for herself, and her father is aware of it. This was the sugya we've been talking about at length. The halacha via la medinat hayam. But then, after the Kiddushin, before the Nisuin, her father goes abroad. Not like we go abroad, you get on the plane in the morning, you come back in the evening. Halach la medinat hayam, that means you're gone for a good long haul. You're out of the picture. You're incommunicado. We hope you'll come back, but you're incommunicado. Medinat hayam is a metaphor for you went over, like we would say, you went overseas. Ve'amda ve'niseit. And she gets up and she finishes the marriage. Meaning she not only has the Kiddushin, during Kiddushin, of course, they're not fully married. Nisuin, in the days when they would do these things separately, Nitkadsha is Ariat Mikudeshet Li, here's a ring. Nisuin was the chuppah, and after the chuppah, you become fully married. So that she did, and without her father's knowledge, her father's away. Amar Rav, Ochelet Betruma Ad Sheyavo Aviha, Veyimche.
She's a Bagul. Oh.
She is a Yisraelite.
Huh?
She
married a Kohen.
Marries a Kohen. Ah. Right? Her father's a Yisrael. She can't eat Truma. You know how this works. Kohanim can eat Truma. If you're a guest in a Kohen's house, can he share the Truma with you? No. Why?
Because
if you're a Kohen and you're a guest in his home, you can eat from his Truma. Right? A Kohen, Mr. Cohen invites his neighbor, Mr. Khan, and they're having a meal together. They and their whole families, all Kohanim, either Kohanim or married to Kohanim or children of Kohanim, can all eat from the Truma. But a non-Kohen, the daughter of Yisrael, who's not otherwise married to a Kohen, or Yisrael himself, cannot eat from Truma. What about Maaser? What if you come to go to the Levi's house?
Yes.
And he's got a pot full of Maaser. There's no problem at all. Because Maaser is not Kadosh. Maaser, Truma is Kadosh. It's tantamount to a sacrifice. Truma is a financial commitment that we make to the Levim.
Wait a minute, which one?
Maaser. Did I say Truma? Okay. Thank you for correcting me.
We're talking about a Ketana here or an Ara?
Yeah, we're talking about a Ketana. Maaser is the gift to the Levi is a financial obligation that we have to give a certain percentage to the Levium, which is why today, when Kohanim can't accept Truma, I mean, a Kohen can accept Truma, but he has to do with the Truma the same thing that I would have to do with the Truma, which is to burn it or bury it or dispose of it in a respectful manner, since nobody can eat the Truma. Since any Truma you're mafrish from your fruits and vegetables is automatically tamei, cannot be eaten, because the Kohen can only eat Truma if the Kohen is tahor and the Truma is tahor. And no Kohanim today are tahor, and the food itself is tamei. So since nobody can eat it, we separate the minimal amount in order to remove it from the tevel, the food that has to now become mitukan, has to be properly prepared so that that everybody can eat it. And then we dispose of it in a respectful manner. But the ma'aser is a financial commitment to a Levi. And if I give my ma'aser to a Levi and he wants to gift it back to me, he's allowed to. And since ma'aser can be eaten by anyone once the Levi shares it with him, and since it's only a kind of financial commitment, in Dine Mamonot, we have a principle, hamotzi mechavero, alav hara'aya. We're going to bump up into that concept again later this evening. That if you and I have financial dealings, and you claim that I owe you money, upon whom is the burden of proof? You have to prove that I owe you money. Your claim that I owe you something is not the right. Bring a shtar, bring the document, bring the IOU, bring the witnesses, bring right. But we go. You call me into Betin and you say, Sachs owes me $1,000, and there's no proof. There's no, I mean, assuming I deny the claim, there's no way you're getting that money. In Ma'asrot, we say Hamotzi mechaveru level ra'aya. Nobody today can prove they're a Kohen or Levi Yisrael. Don't tell me that you know about that DNA evidence. Right? But
I've done the test.
I know you've done the test. Right? Rabbi J. David Bleich published a book last year about DNA and halacha. They were four chapters that originally appeared in traditional journal of Orthodox Jewish law. And he has a chapter on this topic in terms of what's the halachic nafkamina. But generally speaking, we say, Hamotzi mechaveru alav ra'aya. Prove to me, you come and you say, wait a second, I saw you picking all those cherries. I want 10% of your cherries. So I can say to you, Mr. Levi, Hamotzi mechaveru, prove to me that you're a Levi. Nobody can prove it today. I owe it to any Levi. Yeah, but in a world where there are Levi'im Vada'im, right? So then, or Kohanim Vada'im, right? So then, but since nobody can prove it, so we say that the owner of the produce is allowed to keep and eat the Maaser himself in the absence of verifiable Levi'im.
Could Kohen eat Truma today?
No, a Kohen can't eat Truma today because of the Tumah problem.
So it sort of would be your own.
Right. But again, there's also a big nafkamina. A truma is a kol shehu, right? There's no minimum shear for truma. We take off 1%, less than 1%. If I do want to eat the maaser for myself, I have to do trumat. I mean, in all cases, you have to do trumat maaser. Because in the maaser, there's a bit of the truma that the Levi would have to give to the Kohen. That has to be removed before anyone can eat it. And this is part of our procedure of taking trumot maasrot. So anyway, so let's go back. This was just a public service announcement that I repeat from time to time. But since nobody seems to have remembered that I've said this before, it's good that I repeat it.
Just to continue that aside a little bit. The truma is tamei because I touched it and I'm tamei. Yes?
Yeah.
So, but I've already touched the fruit to begin with. And before I mastered it, before I took off truma,
yeah,
it was already tummy. You take off.
Yeah, it's still yeah. It's not automatically tummy. It depends on how you touch it.
Right. Okay.
That's not the problem. The main problem is that the Kohanim themselves are all tmeim and can't. Okay, although there was a headline this week, they claim they found a para aduma.
Yes.
Seems like it's always in the summer.
It's always
around Tisha B'Av. And it's always some farmer that wants to charge you admission to his farm to see it. Now, I'm not being cynical.
No.
But can't be that these are all
the seasons. There
are seasons that para adumot are born, or that parot are born.
Whole flocks of these cows.
And they all tend to...
And they all tend to be red.
Okay, anyway. There's another reason. Genetically engineering cows to create a para aduma. Okay, anyway. Let's go back to the Gemara. It's katsha ledat aviya v'halach aviya l'medinat hayam v'amda v'niseit. She gets married with the second stage of marriage without the knowledge or approval of her father. Omar Rav, ochelet b'truma ad sheyavo aviya v'imcha. In that intermediary stage, she's allowed to eat truma, her husband's truma. She marries a Kohen. So now she is like the wife of a Kohen. So she's allowed to eat the truma of her husband until her father returns. And if her father returns and objects to the marriage, that it was done without his approval, so then she's not married. But in the intermediate stage, Rav says she's allowed to eat truma. You understand that this is she? How do we view this marriage? So what's the case of eating truma? Eating, it's a litmus test to say something about how do we view this, the marriage at this stage. So if she's allowed to eat truma, what does that sound like? That taka, they're married.
But there's obviously a doubt.
But there's obviously a doubt.
And this is a deraita issue. So why are we going along with the doubt?
Okay. Okay. That's exactly the point here. Rav Asi Amar, Eina Ochelet. Rav Asi says, no, she can't. Of course she can't eat. Shema Yavo Aviha V'yimche V'nimtzeit Zara Ochelet B'truma L'mafreya. Her father will come. He'll say, I didn't approve of this. Poof, the marriage disappears. And then what happens? Retroactively, she was somebody who, a Zara, a foreigner, meaning a non-Kohen, or not a wife of a Kohen, who was eating truma without authorization, and retroactively the whole thing fell apart.
Have we discussed at any point how the father enacts the nisuin for the daughter? We only discussed the kiddushin.
She needs to get. What? She needs. Well, she needs to get because she had kiddushin. But in a normal case, adult Yisraelit and adult Kohen, right? He says, "You want to marry me?" She says, "Sure." He says, "Hariat mikudesh liv tibadzu, they're mikudeshim." But she can't eat truma until the chuppah, which is sometimes a long time after. Just like they don't live together maritally as man and wife until after the chuppah, right?
In terms of nisuin, so we didn't discuss at all how the father is involved in nisuin. We only talked about
his approval.
We don't discuss it in anything. I mean,
I'm telling you. Okay, so again. Rav says what? She can eat the truma. Rav Asi says what? She can't eat the truma. Omar Rav Hava Uvda V'chashla Rav Lahad Rav Asi. But there was some case. Interestingly, Rashi doesn't tell us what the case was. In other words, they would discuss it's the Gemara's way of saying. Does Steinsaltz say what the case was? So there was some particular. It's a perfect example that when you're discussing something in the abstract, in the Beis Medrash, right? So you take positions. Like hypothetically, in this case, like what would you say? So Rav says, I would say she can eat the truma. And then there was a case, meaning maybe this theoretical case and walked out of the Beis Medrash into the real world and became an actual case. So when it was an actual case and an actual girl, an actual truma, so then Rav was choshesh to the opinion of Rav Asi, and he was machmir. He said, maybe we shouldn't let her eat the truma. Because why?
Careful, because it's a device.
Because it's a serious matter, a Torah matter. And if there's a suffix, if there's another Rav Kadi, she's allowed to eat the truma. But he wasn't prepared to go to the mat on the thing. And since there was another opinion that said she can't eat the truma, he said better not to eat the truma. You know how this works, right? There's a difference between like a theoretical halacha and an actual halacha, right? You know, when the rubber meets the road, it's that's why yeshiva is such a dangerous place, because it's only theoretical. It's easy to take one position. It's easy to be machmir, and it's easy to be mekel when you're only thinking theoretically. But when there are actual, you know, human beings and consequences involved, so sometimes, in yeshiva, everything's theoretical. In yeshiva, we were learning borer a long time ago. And you know how borer works, right? You know, you have the things you like and you have the things you don't like. So on Shabbos, you can't pick out the things you don't like, leaving the things that you like. So there we are sitting around the Shulchan. And in yeshiva, you know, they have that delicacy, peas and carrots. And all week long, we're like learning borer. And one guy is picking out the peas he doesn't like.
Yes.
The other guy says, that's borer. The first guy says, it's Wednesday. But like when you're in the thick of it, like everything is, you know.
The Rabban Yishalacha talks about how that's the only halacha. There's right, nothing left. Right, yes, he's not interested in the practical application.
That's why he didn't like it, people asking him shilas.
Right.
The Yishalacha thing here says that the Rishonim aren't clear as to whether Rav changed his mind, or he was just being
machmir,
gracious, or being, even though he was considered greater than Mavasi.
And correct, but what do you mean gracious? I mean, like he was
being considerate of his daya, even though he could have easily said, you know, I'm a bigger Talmud Chacham. I know,
right? So. Right. So wait. So the Gemara says, Omar of Shmuel bar of Yitzchak umode Rav sheim meta eino yorsha. But however, it doesn't mean that Rav, when Rav says better she shouldn't eat. Better she shouldn't eat. But Rav, however, maintained. Modeh here means like he maintains. It doesn't mean that he admits to the other side. He maintains, however, that if she dies,
the husband doesn't
inherit. Right?
Which is like,
which? In other words, we say that this marriage of sorts, you know, which is kind of a conditional marriage until we wait to hear the father's opinion. So for certain things we say she's married, and for certain things we say she's not married. So even Rav, who says that she can eat, his Ikar Hadin opinion is that what?
She can eat.
But maybe we should be Choshesh for the more stringent opinion. But if pushed to the mat, Rav would say, yeah, she can eat it, which is a pretty good indicator that what? That he thinks that they're married. But not for all purposes. So, for example, if she dies, generally speaking, a wife dies, the husband inherits all of her property. Generally speaking, a woman who is not yet married or fully married, the father inherits. Why does a father have to give his consent at Nisuin, at the chuppah? Who gives this woman to this man?
Because it's a matter of money.
Because he has to pay for the wedding.
No.
Do you know about that? Do you know the father's supposed to, the father? Of the bride? Did you ever see the movie Father of the Bride?
Yes, I have.
Yes,
that's both versions.
Yeah, that happened when my sister got married. The plot of Father of the Bride played out in my house. You know, like in the movie, the father like thinks he's having a heart. It's only indigestion, right? But the father thinks he's having a heart attack on the night before the wedding, and he's taken to the emergency room, you know, because of all the stress and anxiety and everything else. So that happened to my father before my sister's wedding.
But it was just indigestion.
It was just indigestion. So no, but it's a financial matter because the father has rights over the daughter's finances and her nedarim and everything else until the chuppah. So he's got a stake in the game, right? He's got some standing here, and that's why his approval of the chuppah is meaning he's prepared to give up those rights. So the Gemara says that Rav, even though Rav holds Mi'ikar Hadin, technically speaking, the girl can eat truma during this.
I.e., she's married.
Which is an interesting, but she's not married for everything. And if God forbid she were to die, the husband doesn't inherit her property. Why? Because of this principle called Okay Mamana Bacheskat Mare, which is a different way of saying Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya, the idea I mentioned earlier, right? That the money, property is a kind of fiction of sorts, right? It remains in the status quo. It remains in the possession of the master. And who is the master of her property? Who has control over her property? Her father until the chuppah. But the chuppah wasn't a chuppah that was given with the father's
acquiescence.
It's
interesting that Rav is were more, let's say, more machler when it comes to Yerusha than he is with regard to Truma.
Yeah.
Truma would seem to be,
yeah,
or is a magnitude more problematic.
Yeah. So that's what Rav says. So now the Gemara is, yeah.
What if the girl were 21?
About 12 and a half.
What if the girl were 21?
Or 27.
Or 27, yes. And
26. She, 26.
And she has property. Does the and Chas v'Chalila she dies.
Yeah.
Does the father inherit?
The
no. She's not married.
She's not married, and the father inherits it.
So that, but and if she's married, the husband inherits.
Yeah.
Which means that the father has to give approval even to a grown-up woman.
No, because a grown-up woman is entitled to make decisions about her own self and property.
But once again, we say the father has a stake.
He has rights over the property, but she has ultimate rights. In other words, if an adult child, girl or boy, imagine it's a boy, so certainly a grown man who has no wife and children, etc. Grown man has property. If he dies intestate, as they say,
yes.
So then the closest relative, who's his father, inherits. Every time the son goes to the store and buys himself a Coca-Cola, the father can protest and say, "You're taking away from my Yerusha," or flip it.
Yeah, you say,
right? Normal case. Yeah. This is my parents say this every day. My parents said to me today, "We're going." They're nervous. It's going to conflict with the date of the wedding. They're going on a cruise. I say, "Okay, enjoy." She said, "We're spending all the inheritance," right? So can I be moche and say you're not allowed to spend my inheritance?
It's a cool ski trip.
Got it.
No,
okay.
Ski trips.
Spend kids' inheritance.
Spend kids' inheritance. Yeah, so they are spending down. They are spending down. My parents are planning on coasting into the grave at 120 with one penny left in the bank. I hope they plan it out right? Because you know it's hard to. And if not, they think we can do the Eskimos and set them adrift on an ice floe or something. I don't know. God forbid. So uh, so So can I protest and say you're not allowed to do that? No, it's their money. They can do whatever they want. Right. Even though it ultimately, after 120 years, it has an impact on my Yerusha. The same thing. So here's the next case. Nitkadsha ledat v'niseit shelo ledat. A little different than the first case. Ve'avi hakan. She gets married with the father. She gets engaged. The Tana gets engaged with the father's approval. But then she gets married without his approval, but he's present. He's not overseas. Mm. He knows what's happening, right? He's present.
We presume.
Rav Huna Amar Eina Ochelet. She's not allowed to eat from the truma. Why? Because there's no suffix here. Right? The father did not approve of the marriage.
Did he disapprove?
Yeah, but he didn't. Yeah, exactly.
Is it a shikha hoda?
It's a da, but it could be an opinion.
Hold on.
It was approval or could be without
a... Hold on. Wonderful. Everybody's learning ahead. You know, tomorrow, on Tisha B'Av, I know usually you, every day a little bit you prepare for the Gemara the next week. So on Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to learn Masechet Kiddushin. So make sure you don't do any reviewing of our Gemara or preparing ahead on Thursday. But no, because fortunately we don't have Shir for 2 weeks, so you'll be able to make it up. 3 weeks not to prepare. Right? Her father is
available.
Is available. Wait a second. Before we go on to that case, look here in Rashi. Umoderav, when Rav said that even though I think she can eat the truma, nevertheless, for Yerusha purposes, the father is still the boss. So Rashi says, Umoderav afal gav degabe truma machsekinan le becheskat shenitratse b'chupa. Even though for truma purposes, we have a chazaka, we say the father Mestam is going
to
agree.
Because he agreed
to the... Hatam who de'inema lo nitratse achla midioraita de'arusa ochelet betruma davar Torah. Aval inyan Yerusha de Boinan She'ero Moded Eino Ela Ke'orus V'im Meta Eino Yorsha. So we say for the purposes of Truma, it's enough to assume that the father's going to approve. Because even his tacit approval is approval. So we say in this intermediate period, she really is like the wife. But for financial purposes, it's not enough for tacit approval. He has to give over. He has to renounce his rights. And kolod, as long as he didn't do that, so then we presume the financial rights are still. But and as we split, we put it's like we put the relationship into a centrifuge and spin it around to its disparate parts, and say it's like very brisk. Say for this, it's svei dinim. For this purposes, they are married. For that purposes, they're not. Ah, how can they be? What is this in physics? Right, it can be
particle and a wave.
No, like Schrodinger. No, like Schrodinger's cat. Right. In other words, she's married and married. You're in trouble.
A quantum marriage.
Right.
Quantum mechanics.
But wait, so the v'im meta eino yorsha the kevan de misapkalan im mitratze b'chupa olav. If she dies, the whole thing was the husband doesn't inherit it because we don't have any evidence that the father had given up, had transferred those rights. What did you want to say, Brad?
What does Rashi mean when he says the arusa ochelet betruma devar Torah?
That no, that in other words, that this woman who's in between right? So she, so Rashi says she's allowed to eat minat Torah. She's allowed to eat this because whatever the status of that marriage was, it's enough to grant her the right to eat the truma. Right? Now look at that. You see the Tosfot v'nimtzei zara l'mefreya, right? And as if the father objects, then retroactively she wasn't married to him, meaning she only had kiddushin but not nisuin, and then she was a non eshet kohen who was eating truma. So Tosfot says, you see, hold on a second. Let me show this to the people on the screen. You see here? You see it? Cecily, you see it? Hold on.
When you said Zara Lamafreya?
Yeah. Now you see it? Yes. Okay.
How can he object if he set up the Kedushin in the first place?
He said, I allow you to get engaged. I don't yet allow you to get married. Presumably, if he allowed her to get engaged, she's going to allow, but in other words,
he wants to be at the wedding.
Maybe he wants to be at the wedding. Maybe, you know, maybe he wants to wait until he went. Why? Your daughter gets engaged and you go off on a business trip. Why do you suddenly go off on a business trip? Because you got to make the cash to pay for the wedding. So maybe he says, I want to wait. I want to do it. I want, you know, there's certain people I want invited. I want all types of things. Right. But I mean, look, in other words, your daughter, in not in halakhic terms, in colloquial terms, your daughter gets engaged. Right, you're very happy. I mean, nowadays we don't control these things. What if she goes in elopes? Like you have a wedding planned for 3 months from now, and she goes in elopes. So you might be relieved at the money you saved. But are you really happy about that? No. That's you do the elopes. You weren't even there. You might say no. I mean, I don't give permission for this. I want it to be a normal wedding. I want it to be however it's going to be. So Tosfos says, "V'nimtzeit zara l'mafreya, nir'e d'zara d'nakat lo ka'amarsh, tehei zara d'oraita, shaharei min ha'torah arusa ochelet betruma, ela zara d'rabanan." That's okay. What Rashi means.
Exactly.
Technically speaking, you were not correct. Min ha'torah, when can she start eating truma? From Kiddushin. Midirabanan, we say she has to wait until the chuppah. So how do we allow her to eat? How do we allow her to eat the truma when she's in this safek state? Because it's only a derabanan to begin with.
How can she be allowed to eat truma when she's still in her father's home? It's only Kiddushin.
She's still in her father's home, but she is an Eishes Ish. If she has extramarital relations at that point,
it's
adultery. It's not just a woman having extramarital having extramarital. It's she is married to him, but not fully married. For the purposes of truma, she's allowed to eat from his truma. Dirabanan, we say you have to wait. You can't have the truma until nisuin. Why? So Tosfot explains. Ka'amar v'afal gav delo shayach hacha lo mishum simfon v'lo mishum shema yimazgu. Why did Chazal say that you have to wait, the Rabbanan? For two reasons. One is simfon means, I mean, it's a Greek word, but it means like bittel. Maybe it'll get called off. Maybe there'll be some reason to say the kiddushin wasn't kiddushin, right? Maybe they'll get a get. Maybe engagements get canceled more quickly than marriages do. Or maybe shema yimazgu. No, we're worried that as long as she's still living in her parents' house, you don't want. It's not. Maybe she'll pour some truma wine. For her parent, if it's not a good idea to have truma food in a Yisrael's home, maybe she'll get it mixed up, and her parents, God forbid, will accidentally eat truma, which is very serious. So, by the way, that this is a good idea. You should, I mean, this is about leaving truma laying around, but anytime you go, people now, this season, you go cherry picking in Rosh Tzurim, or some people have things in their backyard. You should never leave tevel laying around. What? I mean, in our day, we're not so used to having tevel in the house because we're not farmers. And in almost every case, the fruits and vegetables that we buy, somebody else has already, we've outsourced this mitzvah to someone else. Right, but you go cherry picking, or you have shesek in the backyard, or rimonim, or whatever it is, you bring into the house, take trumas and masters right away. Don't leave it laying around. God forbid somebody should. Why should somebody assume you have a fruit bowl on the kitchen? Why should somebody assume I can't take something from it? But you should never leave trumas and masters. You should never leave food that's not mitukan.
When you buy something at the market center, they've taken.
In here in Efrat, it's impossible to buy food that's tevel, that hasn't yet had trumos and masters.
Including the farmer's market, I assume.
Including the farmer's market here is all under hashkacha. And in reality, unlike not so long ago, you're here a long time. In Har Nof, where you used to live in Har Nof. Right. So in Har Nof, in the old days, people used to take trumos and masrot and any fruits and vegetables they brought into the house. Some people. So the people that are choshesh, it used to be, they say that in Machane Yehuda, right, everything is completely under control.
Whatever comes out of the shuk,
right. Tnuva and all the big company, everything seems to be under control, but which wasn't the case in the days of old, which wasn't the case. They've been, people used to take trumot masor without a bracha. Without a bracha, for fear that hadn't been taken. But today it's almost impossible. You have to go out of your way to find the tevel. There's a story that when Rabbonim would come on Aliyah, or even just to visit, Rav Kook would send them a fruit basket of tevel. Presumably there was a note attached saying, "Do not eat." To be mezake them as they're getting off the boat in Yafo. To be mezake them to take trumos and masros, you know, for the first time.
No idea how to do it. I
didn't even do it. I mean, Gedolei Yisrael knew how to do it, but
You know, it's the same if you buy cherries or whatever it is, you know, for one of these people setting up a stand somewhere. I've no idea.
That's true. You can buy from a fruit stand someplace, but you know. So Hava Uvda, to look at the next host vote. Hava Uvda v'chashlo Rav l'had Ravasi. But even though Rav said what? She can eat, he says better not to, because of some incident. So Tosfos says, Nired la halakha ki Rav Asi. It seems the halakha really is like Rav Asi, right? That she can't eat. The hahadar be Rav. Right? And Rav. Rav changed his mind, right? Like, Ach Rabbeinu Tam Pasak Hilchata Kirav. But Rabbeinu Tam Paskins like Rav, Lekula, that she is allowed to eat. That's not the halacha, by the way. I mean, when we say it's not the halacha, this is a case that's.
There's so many different things we don't follow today. It's not even.
No. In other words, like this doesn't happen today.
I think with a lot of reasons.
A, Kohanim don't eat truma. B, you don't have this intermediate time. C, we don't know about the Kedusha Ketana. D, but there's still halacha. But this is the Rav's point. It doesn't matter that this halacha cannot be implemented because it's not practiced, but there's still a halacha. Right? So Rabbeinu Tam holds the halacha is like Rav, that technically speaking, she can eat. Shahare Rav Asi Hayat Talmido. Rav Asi was Rav's Talmud, so who should the halacha be like? Uvechol makom sheharav v'atalmid cholkin halacha k'divrei harav. Ba'amorai rishonim. That idea that there's a machlokes between a Rebbe and a Talmud, the halacha is like the Rebbe, that's with the early Amoroyim and prior, the Tanoim and the earlier Amoroyim. Ad Abaye v'Rava, until Abaye and Rava. Aval mikan ve'elech, but from Abaye and Rava on, paskinan kibatrai. Then we follow a different principle of psak. Halacha kibatrai. if they're within one period, we say the halakha follows the later opinion. If you have an earlier late Amora and a later late Amora, the halakha is like the later late Amora. Why?
Standing on the shoulders of giants.
Standing on the shoulders of giants. Lefi shediktaku yoter min harishonim. Because they were a little more...
It's not standing on the shoulders of giants.
No, that's not standing on the shoulders of giants.
Well, okay, correct. It's not standing on the shoulders of giants, but they were more, they examined it a little more carefully. Because it would be true lechula, lechula, or lechumra. Lahamid halacha al burya, to establish the correct halacha. Va'af al gav dechashlo Rav, and even though Rav was suspicious, maybe we should be machbir and follow Rav Asi's opinion, even though he held that it was the other way. Lahadar Rav Asi, mishumachi lo chazar bo. Ela chumra ba'alma, right? He was being machmir. He wanted to cover his bases. You know, he thought he was right, but he thought we should be careful to follow the more stringent opinion. Shehechmira nafshei kemo shematzino beperakam de Megillah. Omar Rav Megillah b'zman. Okay, that's a separate case that shows that he was sometimes machmir about things. Okay, back to the good.
Why does it say shehechmira nafshei that he was machmir on himself?
He was machmir on this girl.
Well, no, but he was machmir as the posik. He was sitting.
The lashon of anafshei.
Right. He didn't want to take responsibility for having given a psak. It might have been.
Then I would say that's makel anafshei.
So what are you supposed to do with a ruling like that? Well, it's like this, but you have to be machmir and do it the other way.
In other words, we say this all the time. That in other words, technically speaking, the halacha has room for leniency. But there's a preponderance of opinions that goes the other way. So we, absent a compelling reason, we're not telling the girl she has to starve to death, right? But we say that, right? And maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the point of saying, hava uvda. There's a particular case, right? There's a particular case. He knew the case. He knew the girl. He knew the family, you know, right? So... Okay, back to the Gemara. No, the Gemara here doesn't interest him. But what would be the case? A Bat Kohen who marries Yisrael, when does she lose her rights to eat the Truma?
So in the interim period between recognition and suing, we could say that...
She shouldn't be able to. Right.
Well, she has to continue to be able to eat truma because otherwise she would starve. She's still living at her father's house.
No. In other words, how much truma do you think was in the average diet of Kohanim?
Okay, but still, she's living in her father's house.
Remember, we're not talking about Karbonot now. This is already long after the period of Karbonot.
That
she is living in her father's house,
right?
Where
maybe she's gonna,
and she's not able to eat it.
Yeah, and a chinami. Okay, go back to the Gemara. Let's skip back. Nitkad shaladat v'niset shaloladat aviha v'avia kan. Rav Huna Amar Eina Ochelet. Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba Amar Ochelet. Rav Huna Amar Eina Ochelet. Now we're trying to tease out his opinion. Why can't she eat? Vafilu l'Rav de Omar Ochelet. In other words, in the earlier case where Rav said she can eat, that's because why? It's this period of suffix. The father is away. We don't know what he's going to say. Here the father is present. So he says, when I say she can eat, when Rav Huna says, when I say she can't eat, afilu l'Rav de Omar Ochelet. Even according, he says, I'm aware that Rav had said in a similar but not identical case where the father is away that she can eat. Hatam hu de lo ita. There, in that case, in Rav's case, the father wasn't here. Hu eino nocheach. Aval hacha, in our case, where the father is present, de'ita, he is yesh, he is here, la'av, hay de'ishtik Why was the father silent? How do you interpret the father's silence? Mirtach ratach.
That's because he was
in. He couldn't get a word out. He was so furious.
Ooh.
Right? You know how this works. Right? Sometimes we say shtika kodo dami. You're silent, it means you approve. Sometimes if you're silent, it means you disapprove. Right? I had this with my kids. They say, stop yelling at me. They say, I didn't even raise my voice. They say, you don't have to raise your voice to yell. you can express anger with silence also. Rav Yirmiya bar Abba Amar, Ochelet, she can eat. Va'afilu l'Rav Asi. The Amar Eino Ochelet, in the previous case where Rav Asi says she can't eat, because maybe the father will come back and say, I wasn't happy, and then retroactively she was eating something she shouldn't have been eating. Our case is different. Hatamhu deshema yavo avi avi imcha. There we're afraid the father's going to come back and say, I never approved of this, and retroactively the whole thing is canceled. Aval hocha, in our case where the father is present, midishotik itnuche itnache.
Because he approves.
Right? If he's silent, obviously he approves. If he had an opinion, if he wanted to express an opinion, if he wanted to object, he could object. Does anyone here object to the union of this man and this woman?
That's not true, but okay. I mean, in reality.
So what's the machloket here?
Different interpretations of the silence.
And again, it's similar to what we've been talking. It seems there's like a theme going on here. How do you interpret a fact in the absence of other evidence? Right? In the absence of other evidence. Right? If somebody doesn't say something, in other words, the father has rights. The father can withhold his permission. But in the absence of him expressing what he's doing, Kolod, he's observing what's going on. We're not talking about where he's on the other side of the world and can't possibly know and therefore is deprived of his right to give an opinion. But he's here, he knows what's going on. If he wants to object, it's his responsibility to object. And the absence of an objection means, Rav Yirmiya bar Abba says, the absence of the objection means, shtika kodo dami. Right? Which seems more reasonable to you in this case?
Second.
It depends on whether the da or das here means opinion or whether it means knowledge.
I think the answer, most things are reasonable, is you'd say that she couldn't eat, but not because of either opinion, just because if it's a suffix, you don't want to have her eating truma. So that would, I mean, you don't know. If you don't really know, I wouldn't want, why take the chance? If there's a possibility, if it could go either way, you have to, you know, put her on the therapist couch, then may as well take the more machmer thing in this case.
Okay.
I mean, we certainly something.
A case where a couple got engaged and parents were very, very upset about the engagement. It was their son, and they couldn't say a thing. They didn't say anything because they were afraid that if they would say anything, it would just create more anger.
More distance, more, yeah.
And it would create more distance.
Right.
So they kept their mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And then, lo and behold, one day, the girl decided that she didn't want to get married to their son, and they were very relieved.
Mm-hmm. And they preserved the relationship with the son.
Right, yeah. but they were on the verge.
Yeah,
But the bottom line is that it either, you know, put up or shut up. Okay.
Right, and as the cases are slightly different. You're talking in conventional cases of parents' feelings towards the children's choices. Here we're talking in the legalistic sense of, do we interpret the father's action or reaction or lack of speech as approval or disapproval? So in the absence of any evidence to the contrary, we need to determine right now, this act which is taking place, is it with the father's approval, in which case they are fully married, or is it is the father objecting, in which case his rights are not canceled? So
it depends on proximity of the father.
No, but even when the father is, that's the point, even when the father is present, in the second case, when the father is present, if the father's not here, we can't know. And therefore, it's left hanging. right? And for certain things, we say they are married. For certain things, we say they're not married. For certain things, we say it's a case of suffik and suffik derabanan lakula and suffik deraisa lachumra. And but in the second case, where the father is here and he's not saying anything, right? No, he's what would make our lives easier if the father, if we turn to the father and say, "What say you?" and he gives a thumbs up or a thumbs down, right? And then we know. But in the absence of that, how do we interpret his silence? So one opinion says we interpret his silence. The silence is nothing. Maybe he's angry. We don't need to see the steam coming out of his ears, right? But in the absence of a yes, we presume he's keeping the rights to himself. We require him to make an affirmative transfer of the rights. And the other opinion says, no, he's right here. If he wants to object, he can, and his silence, therefore, should be interpreted as tacit approval, and the rights are inherently transferred. It's a question about how do you view human psychology, right? In a normal case, what are people? Yes, we know sometimes people are silent because they're steaming inside, and sometimes people are silent because I got nothing to say. Vakasha, go ahead, right ahead. So, what in a normal case? How do we interpret human psychology? That's what's going on here. And there's two opinions on how do we interpret this. It, again, interpreting it in a vacuum.
Kolo, that she's still a ketana, then even like a week later, he could still say objects, right? He can still object this. Because that's what he said in the case of Midat Hayam. He can come back. They were married, and they can come back and say, So that's what that actually would lead me to believe that maybe it's Shikakoda. He's sat here. If he knows, if he wants, right. He'll come back later and complain. If he doesn't, at some point, he's got to say something. You know, right. He can't like never say anything.
Right. So the third case, you see where we are, three lines from the bottom, five lines from the bottom. Nitkadsha shalola data viha v'niseit shalola data viha. Right? The double whammy. She gets engaged, she gets kedushin and nisuin without her father's knowledge or approval. And the father is present. He's aware of what's going on. At least, you know, he gets an update in almost real time. Rav Huna Amar Ochelet. Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba Amar Eino Ochelet. Wait a second. How does that match up with their opinions in the previous case?
Same.
No.
Hafuch.
It's Hafuch. They reverse positions. Omar Ula had the Rav Huna's change of heart here is kechometz l'shinayim v'ka'ashan l'inayim. It's a pasuk in Mishlei, like vinegar to the teeth and smoke in the eyes. What does that mean? It's hard to swallow, right? It don't go down easy. Doesn't make sense. Why should in the case before? He says, Rav Huna says, she can't eat. And in this case, where she's doing, the father is even less involved, he says she can eat. Hashta uma hatam de kidushe de araita, amarta lo achla. In the previous case, when the father knew about the kiddushin, which means that it's real kiddushin, right? We said she can't eat. But here, hacha, when she accepts the kiddushin on her own, which everybody agrees is only derabanan, lo kol shekein? Shouldn't it be even more so?
Against the kiddushin of the kids.
When?
That's case. You did well, then everything without her father. So when she got engaged, she did the kedushin. The father couldn't protest it, and he didn't. Now, he's having got values. Children, right?
Uh-huh.
He protest, but he missed the boat.
So,
this case is now that he missed both.
He missed both. But the fact that he didn't say anything in the first case, in the first instance.
But he wasn't here.
Was here.
No, even if he was,
well,
he could change.
But he was around.
He was around,
but he could change his mind.
So the Gemara says. Turn the page to Memvav Amar Aleph. The Gemara says, "Nira'in divrei Talmid, Yirmiya Bar Abba." Yirmiya Bar Abba was a Talmud of Rav Huna. Gemara says, the Talmuds, either he was a Talmud or he was just a younger generation, right? Near and divrei a Talmud more than Rav Huna. So Omar Rava, my Tama, the Rav Huna, why did Rav Huna say this? Ho'il v'nase b'ma'ase yitoma b'chaye ha'av. Do you remember this case? The case is like this. What does it mean to be a yitoma b'chaye ha'av? The father marries off the katana. What? Then she is widowed. Right? She doesn't go back to the father. And even though she's a katana, she has full rights over herself. That's the case. When she has full rights over herself and she accepted kiddushin, then it's real kiddushin. And then she can eat. Anyway, we'll pause here with these two dots and we'll pick up in three weeks' time. Next 2 weeks, we won't have shiur. And everybody should enjoy their Bein Hazmanim.
Starting the seasonality of the birth of farm animals, I have a link to a NPR story where Roster Hammerstein exchanged with a farmer who explained to him that the ram sheep and the ewe sheep are not making new